Hello and welcome to the Little Minds Big Ideas podcast with the Early Years Network. We are back with another episode for you today, and this week we are going to be talking all about parent partnership.
Dun dun dun.
Woohoo! It's a big one. We've done a little bit on social media about this already a few times. If you scroll back on our page, I've got a post about it, and I've done some things over on TikTok about it, but we thought we'd sit down and do an actual discussion.
It's often quite a difficult one, parent partnership.
Yeah.
And it's very...
You know, depending on the parent.
That's what I was going to say. It's very context-driven, isn't it, on the parent. Different parents need different steers.
Always the parent as well. Also the setting's ability to build a parent partnership.
Yeah. And the child and the tools that you have at your disposal.
Yeah.
You know, if you've only got paper-based methods of communicating with parents. You remember like the old system where you used to write, but I say old system, some people still do that. Versus, you know, having the fancy apps and things that you can get nowadays and mean you can communicate more efficiently and effectively with parents. So it's really context-driven, but we're going to try and hear this slightly broader, I think, aren't we?
Oh, yeah, try and do it as a holistic approach to it.
And when we're discussing it, like what we want to talk about today, we've broken it down into sort of two chunks, haven't we?
Yes.
Oh, I'm just giving you the fingers. Two chunks. We're going to look at it from the perspective of what we gain and the benefits and the why behind parent partnership. And then we're going to look at it a little bit more in terms of like the how and some of the areas that we can drive parent partnership and how we can do it. And just some tips and tricks without trying to go into too much detail. Because
without looking at the individual settings or families or educators or whatever, it's hard for us to pinpoint. But there are some generalised things that you can do to help build up your parent partnership as well.
I think just off the rip, I think parent partnership is so important. Because when you're a parent for the first time and you've got no experience of early years and you may become a parent and have never met's a bit extreme, but do you know what I mean? Like you could become a first-time parent and have never really experienced a three-year-old.
Yeah.
And we talk all the time about how society as a whole has a view of early years as it's just daycare. You know, we did a big podcast on this about how you view early years. Mm-hmm. And if you've got no experience of early years, you've never been in the world of it, you don't know anybody who works in it, you sort of do view education as a whole as like, oh, you know, they play
school
and then they get to primary school and then the learning sort of starts but learning doesn't really start till you get to secondary school because that's when the academic stuff really kicks in and that's GCSEs is the start of learning. Whereas, you know, that's a very misinformed opinion, but it's a widely shared opinion across the whole landscape. So when we're talking about informing parents, you're battling against that sort of stereotype that exists within British culture.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so important from as bastions of early years, which we all are, everyone who works in early years in some guise, we are sort of the bastions of it to sort of break down that. And the first place to break it down and the most beneficial for that child is the family home. And the parents very quickly, I think, by and large, get it.
Yeah.
They very much get the importance of it.
Sorry, it's also not, we can't expect parents to know everything either. And I think that's one that sticks out because when we do get families who do need support or you need to remind a few times for different things and it gets you building that parent partnership, like they're only human and their child has not come with a manual. I'm not saying they come with a manual for us. But if you've done a qualification, you've got a bit of a background into the science behind early development and the different areas that work and theories behind it. So I think it's working with parents, not against them.
And then
it's a big thing.
And then factor in the fact, parents are emotionally invested in this child. Like, I know we are, but like they're, especially if it's their first, it's their pride and joy. You don't know how hard they're to work or, do you know what I mean? A lot of children can come quite difficult. Everyone's got their background story. So for them, that's their pride and joy.
And
that's
they're leaving
everything.
Them with complete strangers.
Yeah, but also that like if they, all their friends, two-year-old has potty trained, it's talking in like full sentences and theirs has got some sort of delay. You then suddenly worrying, oh, is there something I've done wrong? Is there something wrong with my child? When in reality, we've witnessed, you know, thousands of children go through your setting. You know that actually not all of them develop like that. Actually, their friend's child is actually weird because they develop really fast, which is great, you know. But like milestones and measuring children in such a small amount of time is unhealthy. And so it's all these things. I mean, we could chat all day about the mistakes or not mistakes, but the misconceptions parents can have and the worries and it's up to us to allay those worries. And I understand that it can be hard because then parents expect it at the door and you've got a queue of 15 children ready to be picked up and it's stressful and blah, 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 blah. And there's ways to manage that, and there's ways to help parents in sort of that niche context way that you can. But I think it's so important. One of the biggest components of our job that's not really spoken about, and I don't think is always appreciated, is, I don't want to say educating parents because that can sometimes sound like condescending, but it is almost educating. And yeah,
knowledge of parents and parent partnership and working with them and, yeah,
developing their understanding. And I remember we were speaking about this on socials, and someone commented back, well, I don't have the time, nor do I get paid enough to worry about educating parents. And I just think if that's the view you're going into it with,
it's not for you.
It's not for you, but also you're not helping that individual child. You're not helping that family. And at the end of the day, one of the biggest reasons why we're here is obviously to support children, safeguard and provide them, but also to help the local community and the parents. Like, that is what we're all about.
Yep.
Hopefully.
No, you're right. It is. So. That's it. Thanks for listening. Ben's just summed it up in 6 minutes for us.
No, but hopefully that set the ground in of now what we're going to talk about.
So why is it that parent partnership is so important? We've kind of just gone over a few of it, but in terms of a child's development and their development and emotionally, educationally, socially, everything, that holistic view of their development is easier to grasp when you've got parent partnership, because you can talk about what they're doing at home as well as in the setting and vice versa. They'll start to know what you're doing in the setting to support development, and they can bring that outside as well.
Yeah, I mean, some children can be at nursery 50 hours a week and they're there a lot. Some can potentially just be there for like 4 to 6 hours.
Yeah.
And that means most of their learning and most of their development is going to be happening at home. Mm-hmm. And so it's so important. Like, we were just talking about then the cascading information and partnering. It's in the name, partnering with parents to help them with their knowledge and understanding of how they can benefit and help develop that child. And that is across the board. Like you said, it's holistic. It's not just cognitive. It's not just educational, because that tends to be, especially the educational side of it, where parents' fears, and that's what they tend to focus on. But emotional development is a huge one at home.
Yeah,
and that's co-regulation, because if we're trying to put in place co-regulation methods or independence, we talk about independence as well as a major one in terms of parent partnership. If we're trying to do all these things and then they get home and it just goes out the window,
then it's not consistent. No.
No.
So that learning, and I think we've kind of got that next on our list, is that learning continuity in that actually working with parents to keep the routine, whether that's when they first join as a baby and you might need to adapt what your day looks like to suit the individual needs of a child. If their sleeps don't fit with your routine, yes, we can try to adapt it and wean them into our sleep schedules, but that doesn't always happen straight away. We have to work with the parents. It works both ways. But then if we've got 2-3-year-olds that are trying to regulate themselves and we're putting strategies in place within the setting, you have to share those with the parents. Can't expect them to just know them straight away. So it's that consistency between home and setting to make sure that it is all consistent for the child, so they're not going to get confused.
Sort of working it out along. I mean, because parent partnership morphs and transforms and the shape of it and the purpose of it as time goes on. Like the parent partnership with babies and the information gathering, I know we're going to talk later on about supporting individual needs, and that's next, isn't it? But a lot of that information gathering, and that doesn't end. I'm not saying that ends as you get older, but the weight of it in the baby room, it's all about understanding that baby as best as we can and as fast as we can, so we can ensure that the care we're providing, the structure and the routines, like you say, are all in place and optimized. But that sort of shapes and morphs as you go through, because then when you get to the twos, it's a lot about developing independence, and obviously independence often is sort of viewed through potty training scopes, and that's the big thing, isn't it, for a lot of parents. That's where a lot of the hang up comes, and I get it. But that starts to morph, and it's then sort of like the flow of information goes from being very much parent to us, parent to us, parent to us. Then as time goes on, it becomes more us to parent, us to parent, us to parent. That sort of makes sense. And then when you get to preschool, it's a lot about us trying to inform parents almost of the whys and hows of developing children, and what play isn't just play, and the importance of developing through play, and the importance of developing independence, the importance of allowing them to take part in risky play and actually letting loose a little bit and having a bit more belief in what they can do.
Yeah.
The importance of not trying to shackle them down to a table and learn maths. And that's not how children this age learn. And what our expectations of them should be. And it's all these little things that we're trying to feed parents, and also at the same time allay any fears or worries or misunderstandings they may have.
No, exactly. And I think just trying to keep it consistent. Sorry, before we continue, we obviously, it's called parent partnership because that's what we all call it, but parents, carers, guardians, all of the community around the child. I just wanted to put that in there quickly. But we do call it parent partnership. That's just what it's always been called. But I don't want to be naive to the fact that it isn't just parents. And I know that we've got carers, grandparents, aunties and uncles step up and play that parental role. So I just wanted to quickly throw that in. That
was a bit of a lazy terminology, actually, really.
Yeah. But I just wanted to throw that out there that we call it parent partnership, but it's not always the parent.
It's hard to figure out another word for it. I guess you could call it carer partnership. It's a nice alliteration that parent partnership has.
Yeah, it does. Fees. So yeah, just before we went any further, you just touched on it then, but supporting individual needs is huge in that partnership, because if a child has got additional needs or something's happened in the family that we don't know about and behaviour changes you've got a sibling on the way, you just told them they're going to be a big brother or sister and all of a sudden their behaviour, they're always angry that we don't know why. Oh, I've just told them that we're going to have a baby. Oh, so they've not taken that very well.
We've just moved house.
Or we've just moved house, or we've just got an animal, or we've just lost an animal, we've just lost a person in the family, like all those different things. And when we talk about individual needs, it's always about, obviously, what we need to learn from an educational point of view, but also those ever-changing individual needs that might change. Another massive one is food. If your child's dietary requirements have changed, please tell the people that feed them during the day. Like, I just think it might not say, oh yeah, we did have that the weekend, they did have a bad tummy. Just tell us so we can monitor it and we're not ringing you telling you that your child's got diarrhea. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it all boils down to communication, the importance.
100%.
Yeah. And do you know what? Most things in life do.
Yeah.
Like most things in life boils down to quality of communication.
Yeah. But those individual needs also goes back to, we've got written down, like celebrating strengths, talking about challenges, preferences, and it's all about us being able to tailor what we're doing to that individual. But celebrating strengths for me is a massive one, because we've been talking a lot recently with one of our managers about like the daily affirmations that they're doing with their preschoolers. So they say, like, I am strong, I am brave, I am all of these different things. And I think that's lovely, because one thing that children aren't always able to do is talk positively about themselves, and working with parents to celebrate those strengths helps you to bring that into the setting as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
To support that, which is really, really nice.
I mean, the more you can unlock, a parent partnership is so much deeper than just having photographs of family members on the wall. Quite often, not even at the height of children, you know, often you see these family boards and they're like 6 foot up in the air. It's more than that. And it's how it can inform your practice and develop and change your practice. If you go from, I can guarantee if your practice is very, not low down, but parent partnership isn't a priority, or it's very the basic.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you can transform it over time to be very intuitive and you capture lots of information. Your practice will change quite significantly. It'd be quite amazing how much just gaining more information. I mean, early years often is an information game, because you're working with people who struggle to communicate, struggle to tell you how they feel, struggle to understand themselves, how they feel or what they need. So on that basis, every bit of information you can strategically get your hands on, be it through observations, assessments, parent partnership, the more you can get, the better your practice and everything that you can do around that practice can be.
Yeah, no, definitely. One thing actually jumping in before we go any further, you said about family boards. One of my favourite things that I've seen is when in a baby room is, you know, like formula bot tubs.
Yeah.
So you get them all cleaned out once they're finished and you stick pictures of the families on the edge so that a child can roll them and see their family on the tub.
Oh, right. Okay.
So it's a physical. And when they pick them up, pick these tubs up, they can see their family members. That's one for your baby rooms. We will go into more of those later, but that one just came to my head. This is a big one.
Go on.
Behaviour support.
Yeah.
Now, this isn't always negative behaviours. This can be positive behaviours and how are we dealing with different things. But again, boils down to that consistency of parents and educators have to work together, and the co-regulation strategies that you have learned in your setting and that you are finding work with this cohort and you're putting into place, share them with the parents.
Yeah.
Like, don't just expect them to know them. Don't expect a three-year-old to go home and be like, okay, I'm feeling overwhelmed. I'm going to do my star breathing.
Yeah.
Because the parent would be fantastic. But if they're struggling to get that out, those words out, if the parent knows what they can do to support, they can do it together.
Mm.
And it might just work a little bit better.
And we come back to misconceptions and stigmas in society, especially around behaviour.
Yeah.
You know, because you're talking about people becoming parents now. I remember growing up watching, I always come back to this, but Super Nanny. And the idea of children being naughty and sticking on naughty steps. Yeah. And this sort of what you see in schools nowadays with zero tolerance behaviour and all of this jazz. Yeah. It's not until you get into the industry, start understand it, and then you actually sit back and it goes, oh yeah, that does make sense. When you talk about a child's, you know, this prefrontal cortex part of the brain, takes ages to, or not ages, but takes time to develop. It's the slower one that lags behind. And you need that for rationale thought and thinking. And then you think, well, actually, yeah, if that part of the brain does take ages to develop, and obviously it takes ages to develop because you look at children. Yeah, I get it. It takes them time to process their ability to regulate their own emotions and think about things. And if you can work closely with parents to, one, provide them with that information, and then the information they provide you in terms of contextual information will quite often point to triggers and the reason why children are getting triggered and reasons behind their emotions. And like you say, it could be something that's transformed in their world, their environment they live in, i.e. siblings arriving or changing in terms of the family home or whatever it might be. But equally, just sometimes those conversations can spark just little, oh yeah, I get it.
One thing I would say, this is for parents, and if you're at the inner setting, ask us at the door. If your child has had a morning where they couldn't have the breakfast that they wanted because you've run out.
Yep.
They then went upstairs and their favourite pair of socks are in the wash, so they can't wear those. They then didn't get to sit on the side of the car that they wanted to sit in because their sibling was sat in the car.
Sounds like a terrible morning.
And then they got to nursery, but mum went a different route because there was a road closed, so they didn't get to see the bus that they always seeing like to wave at. They then get to nursery and the child takes their toy and they flip. If we don't know the build-up of everything that's happened that morning, we think, oh, that's ridiculous. Why are they just... Reality is that child has just jumped through so many hoops that have filled up their cup of like tolerance levels for the day. And actually, that child taking that toy has just like...
It's been the end of it
and it's exploded. But if we know all these things, we can, before that happens, we can work to bring them back down and talk through what happened.
Or even something as simplistic as sleep. You know, they've got really bad sleep. You know, sleep's a the fundamental driver of how we feel as adults, let alone a child that doesn't quite comprehend it. I mean, we can feel grouchy and miserable, or we know we've not had enough sleep. A child doesn't quite have the consciousness to know that, oh, I only got like 6 hours shut-eye last night.
I'm
probably going to be miserable for my
They
don't understand that. We just get the end of it. So communicating triggers, again, have they drank enough water? Are they ate enough? Like all these little things, like you say, they add up. They're often the triggers and the catalysts of behaviour.
So that's just asking those questions at the beginning of the day and just trying as much as you can.
And we're going to get into this later, but it's prioritising parent partnership. If you prioritise in some way, shape or form, you provide them with, even if at the door during handover is not the appropriate time because they drop off at the busiest time of the day, it's ensuring that you have something in place. I mean, across our settings, we use a system that allows parents to communicate. We've got a messaging system in place, haven't we? So they can communicate. So if there's not enough time at the door, you can say, just drop me a message, and they can sit in the car and do it. And that communication has then happened. There's always difficulties, and we can always point to difficulties and reasons why we don't do it. But there's always ways around it.
Yeah.
Whether it's the effectiveness of that communication and trying to get it as pristine and as consistent as possible.
And it'll work differently for different people.
Yeah.
So some parents will want like a phone call. Some parents will like to use the messaging. Some people like a chat. But you just have to make it clear from the start, these are the best times to call.
Yeah.
These are the best times to pop in for a chat. Like, we've all got open door policies 100%, but at 4 o'clock pickup, unfortunately, it's not the best time.
Yeah. You've just got to use common sense sometimes.
Yeah.
Actually, that talking about key persons as well, because that often comes back around this.
Yeah.
And the key person not doing the door.
Yeah, because you're supposed to build this relationship and then they feel that they've not got it because they never see their key person. And of course, we got shift works and you might not see them every day or every week, but...
It's strategizing.
Yeah.
How you, in the context of the setting that you work in, the children you have, the parents you have, the facilities you have, the technology you have, how can you, within that context, prioritize communication with parents and understanding the children at a deeper level and best you can? Yeah.
Makes sense.
Probably, yeah. Because if you have that at the forefront of your focus, you will do better, regardless of what you actually have at your disposal.
Yeah. And we've talked about like what we do to different in the setting in different ways, but also understanding different family cultures and backgrounds is massive. And that's a really important reason for parent partnership, because it's a way of celebrating differences. It's a way of bringing cultures in so that children feel that their cultures are celebrated in their home community and also in their learning community too.
If you've got a child that's from a different cultural background to you, i.e. lives in a part of Britain that is quite diverse, culturally diverse, or has moved from a foreign country across, parents may speak different language at home. Parents will have different cultures and traditions and this boils down to the smallest of things like customs. You can go to a foreign country and their customs and ways of doing things that we take for granted in the way we talk and communicate.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you go to another country and it's completely opposite. I mean, I remember I years and years ago, we went to work in an orphanage in Cambodia. And I, as you do, just ruffled one of the children's hair, you know, as there was a little boy. You don't even think about it in England. And in Thailand, apparently, to whether this is true or somebody was winding me up, sorry, in Cambodia, apparently it's seen as disrespectful to touch the top of someone's head.
Oh.
If you think about it, yeah, okay, makes
mine, sense. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely, no, not a problem. But it was just really interesting. Like, I offended or upset this child by doing something that you wouldn't even think of being like disrespectful.
Yeah.
And, you know, and little things like that then, when you actually think about it, customs and traditions are really important to know and understand. And I'm not expecting anybody to be an expert in Cambodian custom and tradition. But the best people to teach you that, and probably the people who have been happily most open about it and talk about it, are probably the parents.
Yeah.
You know, and getting that information from them. And sometimes that might be tricky. You know, we've had situations because of upheaval due to war and horrible circumstances where we've had Ukrainian children join. We've had families from Afghanistan join settings. And they don't know a word of English either because of the way that they've been brought into the country. So trying to settle them children, and then you think about emotionally what they've been. You know, we had a group of Afghan children that came to one of our settings, and it was so difficult.
It was really sad, actually.
Really, really difficult. Really
sad, yeah.
And those situations, there's never a right or wrong answer. I can't
really
give you it.
Sad as well, because it was trying to explain to the parent that the child will be okay, and they had to go. And that was really difficult as well, because they didn't understand us. And yeah, that was really tough.
Think about the trauma that they've probably
been
through.
Exactly, yeah.
And then to be ripped apart, you'd probably want to do nothing else but be ripped apart. You know what I mean? You'd want to stick together as a family as much as you can, because you've already been thrown from pillar to post. But that's what I'm saying, like getting that information out of parents and understanding that child as quickly and as seamless as we can, and understanding not just, what their favourite TV program is or colour or dietary requirements, but I'm talking like cultural things and understanding. And you know, you see it through language is a very easy one to point to, because you can pick up on little words and phrases and things.
Even greeting people at the door in their home language.
Customs.
Is a nice way to do things. But that's a reason why parent partnership is so important. It's because it's making everyone feel included and as part of your setting is feel like they belong.
Inclusivity is massive. And as the world becomes smaller and more customs and traditions and people are getting thrown into small melting pots together, having that inclusivity become more and more important. And we don't want to lose traditions. We don't want to lose. It's like when they talk about what the world's going to be like in 400-500 years time, like everybody be the same color, everybody, because of interbreeding and da-da-da-da, like the more and more you think about it, it's actually quite obvious that we'll all, to some variation, become very similar colors. Language will be the same. Everybody will speak, it won't be English, but it'll be some form of English mixed in with the new words that appear over the hundreds of years, wherever we're talking. And do you know what I mean? But doesn't that sound shit?
Yeah, boring.
Doesn't it? Like,
yeah.
Why would you want to live in that environment? People having their traditions and their own ways of living and things like that, it's wicked. That's what makes planet Earth quite fun, going to new places and traveling.
Exploring, yeah. Seeing new things. Yeah,
But even across the United Kingdom, you've got such a melting point of different accents. Like, if that didn't exist and everyone just sounded the same, yeah, great, sound brilliant. Like, yeah. The differences in human beings is what actually makes the world somewhat interesting and provokes conversation. And yeah, people can take it too far. And yeah, there are some traditions that, yeah, probably would be better to die out. Of course, absolutely. But in the whole, you know what I mean? Like, experience going to Japan and experience Japanese culture, which is like completely different to what we have here. And then going over to South America and Peru and like whatever goes on there, I'm sure. But do you know what I mean? Like, that's incredible. So if we can, in our own way, in our own early years way, help children, not just by bringing them in and making them feel more at home, but be proud of their traditions, yes. Be proud of their cultures, the background. And I'm not just talking about ceremoniously bringing out when it's time for a particular holiday or tradition. They bore me, if I'm completely honest with you, because we do it every year. We do the same thing, and it's sort of just a bit of a trope. Like, it's a point to being politically correct. When in reality, we can embed ourselves in different cultures and talk about it in so many much more richer and different ways.
Yeah.
Just by being inquisitive. And we always talk to children about being curious.
Yes, exactly. Next one, which is really important, which kind of links in because we've talked about families, is that family well-being.
Yeah.
Family well-being is really important because we're not just here to support the child, we're here to support everyone. And it's really good if parents and carers and family members feel confident and comfortable enough to talk to staff in early year settings if things aren't quite going right, or if they need support, or if something's going on at home, or all these different things. And I think it's really important that we have good, strong partnerships to make sure that
we've only said it 57 million times.
To support families, both through education and through anything with their child, if they need to be do referrals and things like that, we're supporting them through that and their well-being through that, but also things that are happening outside of the setting to make sure that we can be there as best we can.
You've been doing a lot of stuff on mental health recently, with children and mental health, and that must be a big factor as well in terms of parent partnership, educating them on the signs, what mental health's all about, because again, it keeps falling back into that trope of like ignorance in society. You know, we talk about mental health and it's become more and more prominent, but
it's interesting. I did a training course last week with one of our local councils, which was really good. But the first question was, what is mental health? And I sat there and I thought, we all know what mental health is. We can all talk about anxiety and depression and things like that, but as a definition, really quite interesting to think about. So we'll do another.
And sorry, I know you want to get away from it here, but so the other thing, I heard someone talking, I can't remember where, but they were talking about how for like males under 30, like the biggest killer, I might be slightly wrong here, but the biggest killer is mental health in the sense of suicide. Whether that's the biggest or the second, I don't know. I'm sure you can point to different statistics to give you a different outcome. But in general, it's a major killer is suicide and mental health. And they particularly mentioned males under 30. But no one ever goes to the doctors, or very few people go to the doctors because of their mental health. It's interesting, isn't it? Like, the biggest killer, yet you would never think to go or tell someone to go to see a GP over their mental health. I'm sure, I know people do, but this split between the amount of people that go for common cold versus the amount of people who go for mental health issues versus the amount of people who, under their 30s who die from a common cold versus, unfortunately, takes their own life. It's an interesting dynamic, and it'd be interesting to see the shift over the next 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years.
I think as well it's something I do want to talk about in more detail, but it's starting young and helping children to talk about their mental well-being.
And not seeing, oh, I'm a bit sad, as a weakness.
Exactly.
I think that's the biggest thing.
And that's why family well-being is important, because we've got to make sure that we can support everyone.
Yeah. I think we need to do a podcast on this.
We will, but not today. Today's parent partnership.
I know, but I get excited, like, to talk about things.
But no, not today. next one I wanted to chat about was that parental empowerment. I think that's really important.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I was just
catching up.
Yeah.
I think parent partnership is a great way to make parents feel good about what they're doing as well. Mm. And that's what we should be doing. We should be building them up as a family unit.
Yeah.
Not just building the child up.
Because like we said earlier, they're often parents can often be gripped with fear and doubt. Like, am I doing the right thing? Am I a good parent? You know, am I a good carer? Whatever it might be. And you're full of that sort of, you're looking at other people, aren't you? You're always watching what other people can do. And in reality, like you say, if you can give them that confidence, they'll become more emboldened to do more because everyone wants to be the best and do the best and do the most they can for their children. I don't think anybody would ever question that.
No, but when you feel good about what you're doing, you do more just naturally.
Yeah. You have that confidence to push. And terms such as co-regulation and things like that are probably brand new to parents. So the more you can give them, the more you can provide them, and then, like you say, the more you can set them up for success, the better.
Yeah, and the more empowered they are going to feel.
Should we move on to the next stage? We've sort of talked about a lot of these
we have,
tips and tricks already, haven't
we? These are more like practical things that you can actually do.
Yep.
And you can work on this week and think, do we do this well enough? Can we create this, etc.? The first one is open communication, which
obviously,
we've talked about lots, yeah.
I mean, communication is important in any facet of life.
Yeah.
Like we've said, like the more effective and streamlined your communication is, and
the better.
Like I say, like I said earlier, it's really difficult to get information from children about like how they feel, where they are developmentally, what support they need, the children, even allergies and things like that.
Yeah.
So you've got to get that information from somewhere else. And the best source of information, other than observational assessments, is the people that have born that child or look after that child and raise that child, care for that child.
Yep. You welcome areas. This one for me.
You're very passionate about your welcome areas.
Right, and rightly so, I think.
Go on, Em.
Because it's the first impression that anybody gets of your environment.
And sometimes if your only impression in terms of settings where their parents aren't actually allowed to freely just come into this.
Yeah, but when you do show rounds and people come in.
Yeah, no, but they could come for a show round and then not see the inside of the nursery for 2 years, potentially.
Well, yes, true. Have you got your staff members clearly outside? We've got some really nice things, actually, some of our settings where we've got a little laminated piece of white paper and a whiteboard pen on the wall, and underneath the staff member's face, we encourage parents to write something positive or share something that staff member's done. Now, not only what...
So I came to my head, but can you imagine if one parent was really disgruntled and started slacking people off underneath?
Well, it does say positive, so you'd like to hope not. But that not only gives the staff members a boost, but it also shows other parents that, like, to be involved in that partnership back and forth with what you're doing.
Yep.
Do you have some sort of celebrations of what you do, lending libraries, showing your visitors' books and your celebrations of, like, leave a comment cards and things like that?
I always used to like the votes. You know, like, I know one of our sessions didn't last long, but they used to put, like, a little question out of the day or question of the week, and people could vote with, like, pebbles into, like, different baskets.
Yeah, the only problem with that was is that the children would just take all the pebbles.
Yeah.
So you'd never get a realistic
Again, you could change it a different... You could do a different... You know, like Waitrose or Sainsbury's, they do their little tokens in a jar.
Yeah, I do like those. One of the questions was, like, do you know who your child's key worker is? And if all of them are in no, you've got a problem.
Probably depends... No, I can't say that.
Depends on those.
I was going to say it depends on who's dropping off, whether it be mum or something.
Exactly, yeah. Somebody might know. So, yeah, have a look at your welcome areas. Reflect on them. Do you welcome the community in as much as you can?
I'll never forget that. We once had an Ofsted inspection in one of the settings. I can't remember the context of it, but the Ofsted inspector spoke to a dad, and said, do you know who your key worker is? And he went, no, I ain't got a clue. But that's not the nursery's fault. My child goes in happy every day and he comes out happy every day. That's all I need to know.
Yeah.
And the Austin inspector would be like, oh, okay, because you can see she got quite excited. It was like, oh, there you don't know who it is. And then she's like, at the end of it, she's like, oh, okay, go on.
Interestingly, one of our managers did a training session and she got told you could be marked inadequate if your parent doesn't know the child's the next step, regardless of how much you've... And I would be arguing that if I've put it in a message, in an assessment, spoken about the door, I would be arguing that.
But you're talking about it blue in the face, but some parents, like, don't care about it. But they
don't have that. Maybe they've got high pressure jobs, and we've got parents that are surgeons. And unfortunately, in the morning, if that officer inspector gets them and they're going to do a heart surgery 2 hours later, probably don't care right now in that moment.
Could you imagine flipping that round? Where if I went for like some sort of surgery, I'd briefly understand, of course, what I'm going for. But if an inspector of the NHS came in and said, right, okay, you're going for this surgery. Can you talk me through what will be the procedure? How is he going to do it?
Yeah.
I don't bloody know, but I trust the bloke who's about to do it. Hopefully.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's sometimes the same with us. Sometimes parents just trust us to do it and do best by the child.
Yeah.
And give them the support and help at home to be able to do what they can do.
Yes.
Yeah, Ofsted.
Yeah, yeah. Leave us alone. I'm joking.
To be fair, our last inspector didn't even just speak to parents.
Don't get me started. Don't get me started.
Next point.
Feedback mechanisms.
Yeah.
This is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can do, like I said, on the boards underneath your staff, you can do comment books where you encourage parents to write nice things. You can have your apps where you can write messages, get feedback, parent observations. You can put through those apps.
I love parent observations.
Yeah,
it's right, like, especially when you get the videos through.
Oh, so cute.
Of children taking part in day-to-day activities. You can then know what they're up to on the weekends. Even something simple. I remember the one always sticks out to me is the child where the mum's sending him doing the dishwasher on his own. He was unloading the dishwasher and doing all these bits and pieces. And that's wicked. That's the type of partnership. And I'm not saying parents every weekend have to record their child emptying the dishwasher. That would be a bit long, wouldn't it? But it's that type of thing.
Once a month, yeah. You can share something just incredible.
The quirky stuff of them having that, that was very much talking about independence and having that skills. But it's great to see. And yeah. It helps you know and understand then what, because then if a child comes to nursery and, oh, I can't put my shoes on. Well, actually, little Roger, I've seen.
I know, you can. Let's watch a video of you doing it together. Let's try again.
Turns out your mum's a massive snitch and I've seen you do it.
Exactly. But then there's also concerns and feedback on that, or queries and feedback on that. And are you approachable enough?
Mm.
Because even outside of early years, we all have things that we not complain about necessarily, but have to ask questions. And if when you ask it, it's, okay, so okay, here's the answer, or we can work on that, no problem. So do you have an open door? And I'm not saying that those things need to be written on the front door, because that's not ideal, but does somebody answer your emails? Do you pick up your messages? All those little things to make sure you're picking up feedback.
What I would also say as well is set yourself up for success when it comes to that. Quite often if a setting is, let's take a brand new setting. So if you're opening up a new setting, go about parent communication in a way that you'll still be able to achieve those things
when you're busy. Yeah.
Because so many times I've seen it over and over again, new settings or settings that are a bit quieter at this time, for whatever reason, set them standards of communication to be, I'm going to send home 10 photographs of little Jimmy a day and I'm constantly going to be communicating with parents and they're going to get this dialogue back and all bells and all whistles and it's amazing. But as soon as that room goes from 10 kids in to 30 kids in, you're no longer going to have the time to achieve that. You've set unrealistic standards. And it can also happen in baby rooms. I think, again, it comes back down to communication. When you're joining the nursery, when the child joins, whether it be the baby room twos or preschool, yeah, communication for those first few weeks will be a bit hotter because child's settling. Mum's nervous. She wants to know at 2 o'clock in the afternoon how her child's getting on, like blah, 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 blah. Yeah, but that won't last forever. And we won't always be able to deliver that level of communication because our focus and the
priority is the children on the day. Yeah.
Because it's not to answer emails or take photographs. Photographs are my biggest bugbear. When you're sending home 30 to 100 photographs within a room a day, you're spending far too much time
on an iPad.
And most people absolutely understand that and get that, but you will be amazed by the amount of settings where they think their priority is to take photographs to send home to mum. That's not the priority. I would much rather deal with disgruntled parents that they're not getting the level of photographs because I can sit a parent down and explain to them very clearly why staff, that's not their priority. And 99% of parents will go, oh yeah, never thought about it that way. That makes absolute ton of sense. So set yourselves up and have realistic expectations. If you can only get to your emails at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, be clear and open with parents and set that as the expectation.
Yeah.
Because if they don't know that and they've emailed you at 2 o'clock and it's now 3 o'clock and they've not had a response and you have responded in the past really quickly, they're going to be like, well, what's going on here?
Yeah.
So set realistic expectations and realistic processes in place and be open and transparent as possible.
Yeah, definitely. Family involvement.
Go on.
Encourage families to be involved and through learning and open days and celebrations and things like that. And you don't have to do them all the time.
No.
We do one a year, really. One big one a year for each setting. And it works lovely because
we treat it like one big one a year as well. We get the full mile on it.
We take it too far, to be honest. But
But it's important. It's giving back.
Yeah.
To a community of people that also turns over so fast. You know, you look around from year to year and there's new faces everywhere, there's new people. And it's a early year settings are really, really important cornerstones of local communities. It may not sometimes feel it. It may not sometimes, you may not naturally think that. Yeah. But the amount of people that in the local communities that pass through these establishments, not just the children, but parents and the families as a whole, you know, if we can give back in whichever way we can, then that's a wicked thing to be able to do at least once a year.
Yeah, no, exactly. But ask them to get involved, decision-making of what you're going to do and how you're going to celebrate different things. It's really important to do those as well.
Yep.
Training and support. We kind of talked on this. I'm not saying you should bring your parents in and do a training session, but can you make a video to send out to them? Can you do like a Zoom training or something just to chat about things that you're doing in the setting? I think that's a nice way to involve parents.
Even just talking to them about it, you know.
Yeah.
Even saying, hey, look, I listen to the Early Years Network podcast and...
You should too.
And we also access all the training on the Early Years Network. Maybe you should check it out too.
Yeah.
But all joking aside, that is the types of things that will help. You talk about co-regulation, send them the podcast link that we've spoken about it. Things like that will always help. I'm not expecting you to sit every single parent down and teach them what co-regulation and the concepts of it is. And how you do that. Use the tools and resources. And they are adults as well. Tell them to go find the information. Tell them that, you know what I'm trying to
say. Guide them.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be, you have to hand it in. But if you can, and in ways that you can provide them opportunities to do things and learn, then by all means, go for it and do it. Like, you'll only help yourselves and your children in the long haul.
Yeah. Celebrating different achievements.
Yeah.
Celebrating achievements with families is lovely. Celebrating the achievements of parents and carers too, as well as the children. I previously had a parent who had passed a driving test. So celebrating that with the family is lovely because they had told us that they passed the next day. We made a well done card with the child in the setting and sent it home.
Before the child got a card, did you?
No, they were very proud. But we said, shall we make something to celebrate them? You know, I'm going to do it on my own. But it's just about working and being like, no, we are proud of everything that's going on in the home. Yeah. And then they feel proud to share achievements that their child is doing back and forth and so forth.
Yeah. Bit of support network.
Exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And the last one is accessibility. Is everything accessible to your parents? If they're going to have to jump through hoops to find different things, then they won't bother. So making sure that policies, procedures, information on keyword first, information on the curriculum, things like that are accessible, so they're going to want to work with you.
Like I said, accessibility or communication, make it as easy as possible for them to communicate with you, but also at the same time, transparency and setting
those boundaries in place.
Yeah, absolutely.
What I will do is I'll create a little in-setting practical ways you can support parent partnership and pop that out this week as well.
Some sort of class we can get around this as well.
I'm sure there is. Let's get around to doing that as well.
We'll prioritise getting some sort of class out there on parent partnership and just some strategy in some ways and implementation of it. It would be a good idea.
That would fit.
Okay, well, quick and easy one today. I say quick and easy.
It's been 43 minutes.
That's relatively quick and easy.
That is, yeah. I think, and don't underestimate parent partnership, it is really important. And reflect this week on what it is you do. Can you improve? Is there anything you're already doing you can... can keep going now and make bigger and better and
work.
It's something that we're all aware of, we all talk about, we all know it's important, but sometimes can be one of the first things to go and miss once we get busy.
Yeah, when things get stressful.
And I get it. I absolutely get it. And especially because parent partnership, we often think it's verbal communication at the door.
Yeah.
And that's difficult. You know, if Ben picks up a word block, we're going to get that handover probably. When somebody picks up at 4:05.
Everybody else,
Or when you're bitching to go at 6 o'clock. I get that, absolutely. And if a parent is expecting you to, when the nursery's closed, have a 20-minute handover, you also have to be firm and fair. And
I had this conversation. We had a parent apparently in one of our settings who would turn up at 5 to 6 and want to chat for 20 minutes. And I said, unfortunately, you have to say no. If you'd like a 20-minute handover, you need to come earlier because you don't pay after 6 o'clock and we don't get paid after 6 o'clock. So you can call us at a more convenient time. Or you do have to be firm, to be fair on that as well.
Or let's set it up in a way that whether it's in the morning or the end of the day, that we know we're going to have some sort of parent meeting or parent meeting. And that member of staff or whoever it might be can actually set it up and plan it in accordance with their weekly routine or whatever they're doing in their personal lives. And
yeah.
And it can be a bit better organised, and then the conversation can also be a bit better because
everyone's
staff members going in it to have the conversation and prepared and isn't on the Friday night being collared and thinking, I just really want to go. It'll be out in an hour.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, let us know what you're doing in terms of player partnership. Leave a comment. We'd like to know what's going on.
Yep, I'll clip this up as I always do and spread it across the
social medias. And I think that's it.
Yeah, have a lovely week, guys.
Yeah, enjoy, and we'll see you next week.
Well, ciao.
Bye.